What's up, everybody? It's a members only episode on our way to Toronto tomorrow. Me and Robbie the Fire Bernstein will kick it and take some of your questions and talk about some shit with you for a little bit. And we haven't really talked since Monday, Rob. So a lot of stuff's happened since last we've been talking. How you doing? How's your week?
I'm doing
been?
Well. You put out some good episodes. I enjoyed them.
Oh, thank you.
I got to finish both. I listened to, I'm like 75% through both, but they were great. Also, Burnett, New York, people, tonight, and then Michigan, and then Pittsburgh. Excited to porch. Been working on my FBI thing. Got a whole bunch of new angles on it, so excited to run it.
What is that? Burnett, you said? Burnett.
It's like right next to Ithaca.
Oh, okay. I don't know where Ithaca is. All right, so you're going to get on the road. So you're driving all the way up.
Yeah,
so you're going to do shows in Ithaca tonight. What are you, staying there, waking up in the morning, driving
basically,
up?
Something like that.
All right. Not bad.
It's funny though, because you know, when you're completely alone in life, you don't get to blame anyone else for things. And I looked at my date today and I was like, who the fuck made this at 7 p.m.? Who did that? Like, and I'm like, right, that was me. I don't know why I did
no,
that.
No, I understand. Now, you know what I used to like doing when but you know, I used to, when I was opening for Jay, but he wasn't much of a drinker, so he didn't give a shit about not drinking for the night. But I was always a fan of when you got a gig and then a drive to the gig the next day is getting back out on the road after the gig and just like taking a few hours off tomorrow's drive. But, you know, hey, to each their own. These are decisions you have to make.
Typically when I porch, I try and get to the second location after the first night so I can be in the same hotel for 2 days, because I just lose so much time packing and repacking
the
car.
Yeah, it's so much better. At least you can stay there for 2 days, be a regular person a little bit.
Yeah, so I typically try and do that. I don't think I want to cross the border at night, which maybe is my own absurdity, but I just feel like
I get your point.
Rental car at 2 a.m. with my passport card might be shadier
you don't
than
want
at
to explain.
12 in the afternoon.
I like to get to the hotel early and really set up shop. You know what I mean? Yeah, it may not go over great. All right, well, let's get into here. Let's talk about some shit, because there's, I don't know, a decent amount that's been going on since me and you haven't even talked since the furious Trump Netanyahu phone call that
bullshit
probably doesn't exist. Did you see this today? I don't know. This isn't, not that there's that much relevance to this. It tickled me. But did you see that Germany got booted off the UN Security Council? Or I shouldn't say got booted off, but didn't win the seat on the UN Security Council. And they really said it was their support for Israel is what lost them. I'm sorry. I just think there's something so funny for that Germany is being punished for a genocide involving Jews, but this time for being way on the other side of it. Like, there's just like something from the German perspective. Like, I don't know. Maybe this is a stupid joke. I'm saying from the German perspective, they're like, V genocides the Jews, Z gets mad. V helped the Jews genocide. Z also gets mad. What do you want me to do? Like, you're just like, you guys, Germany, meet in the middle sometimes, man. Just don't genocide. Just don't support it or do it. That's all we're looking for. Yeah.
They just don't have a handle on the rest of the world's opinion on genocide.
Yeah, they're always way out. They're always way out on an island, those Germans. Israel hasn't been punished.
I thought
for
you
the
can
genocide
support
yet.
The Jewish genocide. No, Germany, it's no genocides.
But I was told the lesson of the Holocaust was this really just about the Jews. So anyway, so they lost that. Look, I will say more seriously, it does, it looks to me like there might be kind of some positive signs of the last few days. Now, don't get me wrong, this is clearly all bullshit. Like the Axios article, the Trump furious phone call, this is all bullshit. But, okay, you did see that they announced that they have a ceasefire in Lebanon. Now, again, with all these things, Rob, you know, ceasefire never really means ceasefire. Iran also recognizes that. They're looking to get what they can. But anyway, I guess my point is this. Between the Axios story and then it coming out that there is a ceasefire, what they're doing, it does seem that both Israel and the United States here are setting the table for at least the first phase of this memorandum of understanding. And I think maybe there's a chance that we get through that first phase somewhat quickly, like the next week or two. That would be the best case scenario. Now, I don't think this is happening because Trump is furious at Benjamin Netanyahu. I think it's probably much more likely just logistical. We need to replenish our munitions a little bit. We need to buy some time. We need to hopefully ease up some of the, you know, traveling through the Strait of Hormuz. And so essentially nothing's been accomplished. Who knows if it's over? Clearly nothing's been accomplished. They're not going to get anything out of this deal other than, like, you know, stopping the hostilities for a little bit, if they even get that. But at least it does seem like maybe they're moving in that direction. They're clearly trying to set up some narrative where they can exit this thing.
Dude, they're just so exhausting. That's my takeaway at this point. I'm done trying to predict and cover this. Like, Rubio, I mean, I sent you the clip, but Rubio's going, the war is over. They tried to pretend like the missiles that were sent to Kuwait were totally intercepted, and then that turned out not to be true. Donald Trump was yelling about the chirping, that everyone's giving him a hard time.
Wasn't that so funny? Donald Trump actually said, he goes, man, you know, the one thing that's making it kind of hard to make this deal is just all the chirping. Just stop. That's the real problem here. The real problem with the war is just the way we've been criticizing it. If me and you would just shut up, Rob, we'd have had that straight opened already. Yeah. Now, I mean, you know, sorry, go ahead.
And just amidst the lies, you got now got a war powers resolution, but it doesn't matter because if it passes the Senate, it will get vetoed. And then they'll make the claim the war was over within 60 days. This is a new war. These strikes are not actually war. We don't have any mechanism to possibly.
No, cover. Not to actually do it. But I will say there is. No, you're right. But since you brought that up, I mean, look, there is something. You're right. First of all, I don't think it's going to pass the Senate. But then even if it does pass the Senate,
which, by the way, doesn't make sense. It's supposed to be in the power of Congress. Why should Senate, like, firstly, you shouldn't need a war powers resolution. If you're already within the, if you're already within this fictional, you know, landscape that the Congress has to make a war powers resolution in order to grant the power war or to refrain from war, then why is there any power in the Senate's hands over that? That should just be in Congress.
Well, that's right. And well, that's kind of what's interesting about it, right? Like, who knows what's going to happen in the Senate here. But just think about it like this, like for the Mark Levin constitutional conservative types. Well, here you have a situation where the Congress says that, or excuse me, the Constitution says that Congress has the war powers, that Congress, only Congress can declare the wars. So the way the system is laid out is that the president has to go to the House of Representatives and get permission to launch the wars. Here you have, not only does the president launch the wars without the permission, but now the House is going, no, we say no to this. And already, just think about what an obvious constitutional crisis that is. You're like, oh, okay, well, this is completely, obviously, this is working completely against the spirit of the thing, where you needed this branch's permission, and this branch is clearly telling you no. It's like, my point being that, like, even if the Senate, like, you know, like, votes this down, you'd still go, that means he couldn't have gotten a declaration of war, because he would have needed the, that would have been the House voting down the Senate's declaration of war. So anyway, it's just, yeah, the whole thing is a complete fucking fraud.
Yeah. And tough to follow, because the administration is just lying through its teeth and then mad at the mad at anyone that's even questioning their lies. It's quite a landscape.
When Marco Rubio said the war is over, you know, it's like, there was something about it. I remember when I was debating Douglas Murray, there was one point, it was like 45 minutes of the struggle session, you know, of him being like, Joe, have you not had enough pro-Israel guests on? Who is this Daryl Cooper? Who is Ian Carroll? Blah, 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 all this stuff. So it's like 45 minutes before we get into debate. And then, like, we started getting into it. And I was like, okay, finally, like, here we go. Let's start cooking. And I started going off on the global war on terrorism and the price tag of the whole thing or something. And he goes, you know, and he, like, I don't know. There was like a moment where I said something like, I go, look at these wars. They've cost $8 trillion. They've killed 4 million people. We got 30,000 troops of our own who have committed suicide and were, you know, driven, you know, blah, 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 like all the shit. And he goes, well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. And you're like, well, no, it's an overwhelming point, which is why the only response Douglas Murray has is that's a fair point. But Then at one point I go, we've been at war for the last 25 years. And he objects to that. And he goes, oh, this, we've been at war. You have not been at war and you don't know, blah. And he goes off on this whole rant about how he objects to me saying we've been at war. And then at the end of this long rant, he goes, and the war in Afghanistan was simply to take out the Al-Qaeda cells there. And I go, no, that was the war for the first few months. And then it became a 20-year long regime change war against the against the Taliban. And then he goes, that's because you got sucked into war. And it's like, wait, we started this with you objecting to the phraseology, we're at war. And we're ending this with you telling me you got sucked into war. So like, what? And then you realize you're like, oh, all that just happened here was we wasted 10 minutes. That's all this was. It was never any, you know, and it does seem like even when, because it'll happen like someone will just go like, and now we're in this war. And he goes, the war's over. Like, it's just to... Because what do you mean the war is over? I thought the official talking point was it's not a war. There never was a war. Like, they just change it just to be able to argue with you, just to like eat up a few more moments before it's revealed that they have nothing. It's like these desperate, I've seen people in a bunch of debates do it. It's kind of desperate, like run out the clock. Like, it's why people interrupt a lot in debates. It's why they say the same phrase over and over. Like, they're kind of just like, let me get to like, okay, this senator has 5 minutes left. Let me get through this to the next guy. Oh, that's, I'm sorry. Now we have to debate what a war is. It's like whenever, I don't know if you saw, there was one time, I literally could only watch a few minutes of it, and this is where I tapped out, but Konstantin Kassin debated that Destiny guy.
What happened to Destiny? Is he still around?
I haven't heard from him.
I haven't seen or heard from him in 6 or 12 months.
He fell out of my algorithm. I don't know what he's doing, but I'm very happy for that to be the state of affairs. But they were debating, and at one point, Konstantin, this is when I turned it off, Konstantin said that the level of immigration to the UK has been unprecedented. And Destiny is like, what does that even mean? How is it unprecedented? And Konstantin was like, we've never had it at such high levels before. And then Destiny was like, yes, but what does that even mean, unprecedented? Because everything's unprecedented. Like, we've never been in 2026 before. And he goes, well, yeah, I mean, time keeps moving forward, but we still have this word called unprecedented. And like, you know, like whatever the numbers, I don't remember the exact numbers, but he's like, we used to take in 60,000 a year. Now we take in 6 million a year. So this is unprecedented. And Destiny goes, well, it would still be unprecedented because it's 2026 and it used to be 1976 or whatever. And Konstantin goes, well, no, like if we took in 60,000 immigrants this year, that would be precedented because we've done that. But and you just find yourself in a debate over whether the word unprecedented means anything or not. And you're just like, it's just people do this tactic of just like, let me just stall this out. Let me just get a little something. Let me try to argue with you on this nitpicky thing so I can avoid the obvious broader conversation, which I'm pretty insecure about. Fight. I don't know. I find this tactic is it's very transparent and it's incredibly unpleasant to deal with. Like, it's tedious. It's just annoying. You're like, dude, come on. We're here to talk about the big thing. So let's get into it. Stop. You know, oh, okay, sorry for using the word war in the thing where big metal machines drop bombs on cities, in that thing. Let me ask my question now. There's a question about the 2027 NDA, the U.S. Israeli like integration thing, which didn't I, you know, dude, I gotta, and I'll be prepared for that this week. I do apologize for that because this is my job. I gotta read up more on this. But did you see any of this, Rob? Didn't Bibi admit to taking credit for it? That this was his plan or something like that the other day?
I called it out when Netanyahu was in a interview about a month ago. And he said, we need to stop taking U.S. support and we need to move on. And I was like, all right, you've worked out a new scheme here. You've realized that this isn't working and you need a new way to hide that you're taking American money. And I have not done all my research on Section 224, but it sounds like this is their new mechanism, is a supposed joint partnership.
Yeah, that, real creepy
really
stuff.
Integrates the two militaries together, and that they both supposedly put up investment. I'm sure Israel won't be putting up as much. It sounds like this is a cleaner backdoor, I guess, for less reporting on how much money goes to Israel and how integrated the two militaries are.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
For all the people that say they're our most loyal partner and that they're not really running the show, if anyone could explain why that country specifically is the one that needs this clause and this level of integration.
Because everyone wants to team up with us in this way, right? Like, it's not like there's not any of our allies who wouldn't go, like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like we're playing on, like, oh, we got a 2-on-2 basketball game coming up. And it's like, I'll take LeBron James. Like, yes, I'd like to team up with the most powerful.
Go with Wemby now.
Yeah, it might be Wemby. Well, whoa, Wemby? Jalen Brunson? Something like that? Who is this Wemby guy?
Oh, dude, he's good.
Dude, he's good. Rob, I'm not saying he's not good. I think he's a little short for the league. I think he's a little short for the league. I don't know if his game's going to transfer. Down 1-0 right now, Rob. Why are you celebrating losers? Why do you come to Part of the Problem to celebrate losers, Rob?
I think he's too scrawny that he's not going to have real longevity. But
I do worry. Same thing. His body type, you immediately go, okay, he's going to blow out one of his legs in a few years. Wemby, we really did just get off on this tangent. Wemby can do things that no one in the history of basketball has been able to do. He is a different puzzle that no one really could have imagined. Sean Bradley with a handle who can stop on a dime and bang threes. Like, it's just, there's really never been a player like him before. It's like, he changes the entire way you have to play the game. Like, he changes the entire way you have to, like, go to the basket if Wemby's in the game. It's like, there's not really like you're basically going to the basket to try to get the defense to collapse, to kick it out. Cause you know, there's like no getting a shot off over that guy. And then he is essentially like unguardable to a degree. Like, you just go like, okay, well, try not to let him in here. And then he's going to do whatever he's going to do. Cause like, if he's shooting fadeaways, dude, you're not like, I don't know. It doesn't even make any sense to challenge it. It's just kind of like, all right, Wemby gets to shoot as many of those as he wants. He's an incredible player. But next, let's go.
Yeah, last night's game was unreal.
Dude, it's crazy. We haven't been to the finals since 1999. We meet the Spurs again, the same team we played in the finals in 99. And, you know, the Knicks in 94, we lost in seven. I'm trying to remember this. We won game five. We lost game six. We lost game seven. So we won game five to take the series lead 3-2. So it was 2-2 before then. But I can't really remember. I'm almost positive we lost game one and came back and won game two. So, like, I think this is the closest the Knicks have been to the championship since 1972. Up
crazy.
One game to nothing in the finals. I think someone could double check me on that, but I don't think I think we may have been on the gold standard the last time the Knicks were this close.
That's crazy.
To a championship, Rob. There is gold, an ounce of gold would have cost you $35 the last time we were this close. You know what that ounce is going for now, Rob? Not 35.
So.
No, way higher, I think.
32.
I think
it's 50. Almost.
No, dude, you know how high gold is right now?
I
think it's like 4,800.
4,800?
Natalie, what's the price of an ounce of gold? Maybe I'm wrong about this. I thought it was like almost 5,000, which is really crazy. It really is the best measurement of inflation, dude. Like, not for whatever it, 4,500, right? Isn't that what that says? 45. So, like, gold in the year 2000 was like $300 an ounce.
It's crazy.
Like, even in the year even by the year 2000, it was, yeah. Anyway, no, I remember when I first really got into all this shit was like, it was like 2007. I found Ron Paul. Imagine the timing of this, by the way. This is really what sent me into this. So, like, I find Ron Paul in 2007, Rob. Okay. I'm real into him for the war shit. And then he keeps talking about all this Austrian economics. And I'm like, what? This has got to be kind of wrong. So I started reading about Austrian economics. So imagine the timing here. This is about a year before the financial crisis. So for about a year before the financial crisis, I start reading the Austrians. And then it happens. And then you're like, oh my God. But so I remember when gold started skyrocketing, it went on this run, and I remember when it cracked, it was between $1,200 and $1,300. It hit like $1,240 or something like that. And they were like, yo, this is the all-time high in gold. No one could have ever imagined, you know, all these people holding gold are fucking did it. They're rich now. And it was at $1,200, almost at $5,000 now. Actually, I'm exaggerating, but $4,500. Okay. Where were we? What were we talking about right before that, Rob?
Section 224.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. All that. Yeah. Now, well, I guess, oh yeah, and basketball. Yeah, there you go. I guess yesterday in an interview, again, like I said, I gotta read more of this. We'll talk about it on the show this week. But I guess Benjamin Netanyahu did like allude to like that this was his plan. Oh, this is the point I wanted to make, which maybe I've said this to you before on the show, but you know, all that shit. Whenever anyone in the Likud talks about Israeli independence from the U.S., it's all fucking, this has always been part of their thing that they tried to like brand it in this way. It's in the original Clean Break memo. Like the people who planned on the U.S. overthrowing every Israeli enemy for the next 25 years, which we went on to do, they also planned that, and the talking point should be that we're separating. Like even back then, you know, if you could imagine, right? Like the neoconservatives kind of came to power during like, well, you know, essentially in the Ronald Reagan Republican Party. And so a lot of the spirit of the thing was, you know, Milton Friedman type, you know, economics and Ronald Reagan preaching small government and things like that, kind of some things that might sound kind of good to us. But so they always, even the neocons, like that was the con part, you know, like they became kind of like conservatives and recognized that market forces were superior to central planning in some ways. And so they always had like just a little pinch of, well, you know, like if you'd think that Dick Cheney and George W. Bush would talk about lowering marginal tax rates to increase revenue to fight their wars, but they still were like, instead of 39, let's bring it down to 35. So like in the Clean Break memo, even there was some stuff about how like essentially like Israel's too socialist. They should cut back on some of these government programs and then use the wealth that creates to fucking take all of the Palestinian territory. You know, like there's still evil war hawks. But anyway, they, even David Wormser and Richard Perl said, stop taking the civilian aid, you know, cause that'll be a good like branding thing for Israel and their independence. So stop taking the civilian aid, cut some taxes and some spending. That'll make up for it in your economy. And then, you know, you keep taking the military aid, obviously, like we're not crazy here. But so when you hear Netanyahu talk about how like, I have a plan where in 10 years, we won't take the $4 billion a year or something like that. Believe me, there's always other plans that cancel that shit out and will be worth way more than that. And isn't there something about Netanyahu going, you know what? I'm giving you my 10-year notice. 10 more years, you support me unconditionally, and then I'm on my own. Like, seems like we should be the one deciding that, not you. But hey, what are you going to do?
But, you know, Trump got on a phone call, yelled at him, and got it in Axios. So I'm sure Donald Trump is really running the show there.
Well, it just makes no sense even. It's like, dude, you launched this war with him last year and he did the same thing. So you knew going in that you were launching a war with someone who wouldn't try to let you leave. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. I saw, by the way, I guess we could talk about this here because this is the Dave Rubin thing is pretty goddamn hilarious. And we did not get to that. We were debating maybe covering it on the show this week, but we didn't get to it. But, dude, you know, there did, I literally just saw the, you know, Piers Morgan does like the commercials, the teaser or whatever for the show. So I haven't watched the show yet, but I guess it's out now. That they did like, this is what's so funny to me is that they did with Will Chamberlain, they had him go up against the guys that Dave Rubin went up against. Like, they brought three of them in and had Wilt Chamberlain to just essentially be like, let's see if someone can do better. Because like, Dave Rubin did so terrible on this thing. And they just had this. And then, of course, Wilt Chamberlain is also really bad. So now it's just these three kids fucking up Wilt Chamberlain now on the thing. And it just makes it seem like these kids are unbeatable or something like that. I don't know. It's so bizarre, dude. What did you, I have not watched the whole thing, but I have seen several clips of this, and it was, I got to say, it was somewhat enjoyable.
Yeah, I can't suffer through that whole thing, but, you know, bless these young whippersnappers doing their homework and showing up prepared. And the fact that Glenn Rubin has nothing but those,
Dave Rubin. I love that you always say Glenn Rubin. Through every note, by the way, through every text and email, Rob's it's been like, we still have that Glenn Rubin clip to do.
I don't know. He strikes me like a Glenn. What can I say?
He does. He is a Glenn. It's true.
Yeah. He's more of a Glenn. Someone should tell him. But yeah. Listen, when you just have the propaganda talking points and nothing that can go two sentences past that, and you just have to recycle and pivot, it becomes pretty transparent in some formats. And it becomes quite transparent why none of these people want to debate you. And I think he made a tactful error of showing up for this one and thinking, I guess, that these were the Ben Shapiro random college kids and not slightly more prepared college kids. But I think one of the funniest ones, even though I wouldn't have been prepared, I would have had a different conversation. But when they got into the economy and the kids just like, well, what metric? You know, you got GDP's down, this is down, that's down. And he just throws it all at him. And, you know, Rubin clearly has nothing. He goes, well, the stock market, as if that's even representative of America. And he goes, that's not even accurate, too. But that was like, so in a nutshell, a one person actually is prepared.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
The is level... taking on a regime talking point of the economy's better. Great. How is the economy better?
Dude, the level of like how he, well, look, let me say this first of all, because the thing, the channel is called Jubilee, and man, I don't mean to say this like in the wrong way, because you get to, well, it's a members only episode, so hopefully I don't have to worry as much, but I hate it. I hate what they do. I just think it's awful. I'm sure there's good people there or whatever, and I get even like the spirit of it kind of being okay, but it's this thing, like, I wouldn't do it. It doesn't make any sense. Give me the best guy, you know, like, give me the, that's always been my thing on these debates. Like, give me the best guy you can find and let's have the longest debate possible and let's get into every topic. It's just essentially what Jubilee is. If you haven't saw it, it's a huge channel. They got like millions of subscribers, but I've only become aware of it like fairly recently. But they basically put one guy at a table. And then there's like 20 people who surround them. I think the show is called Surrounded. And then you have to like lightning round debate each guy. Now, I saw some clips. I haven't watched like full episodes of it, but I saw some clips from the Glenn Greenwald one. And then I had made this point, but then I saw Glenn Greenwald also made this point. And I think he didn't realize exactly what it is, but like, it's almost, at least the one with Glenn Greenwald, it becomes... Well, like, okay, so it's almost as if the implicit sale is that here's Glenn Greenwald and here's 20 regular people. Each one of them gets a shot to like go up against Glenn Greenwald. But that's not exactly what it is. What it is like, here's Glenn Greenwald and now here's a room of F-list podcasters. You know, it's like everyone in that room has a YouTube channel and has a Twitter following and does this. It's just none of them are particularly big. And so then it becomes a whole bunch of people, really none of whom deserve a crack at Glenn Greenwald, each getting 5 minutes with him and each just incentivized to like, let me try to own him here. So it takes, whereas Glenn Greenwald would debate any one of those guys and just destroy them for 3 hours. Now, instead of that, which they don't really deserve anyway, he should be debating Alan Dershowitz or someone more relevant or something, but now they're each just trying to talk over him, just trying to get an own, just, and it kind of gets stupid or whatever. Like, I personally, I look at that, I go, that's a waste of Glenn Greenwald's time and talent. But then Dave Rubin goes into this, and Dave Rubin, it's just such a weird thing with him, because you're like, look, Glenn Greenwald is like, as you know, Glenn's about as good a debater as there is. The guy's fucking excellent. Excellent. So there's something too, almost like, well, dude, I'll take on all 20 of you guys or whatever. Now, I think it's a waste of his time. I'd like to see him take on one great opponent, but whatever. He fucks up these kids. Dave Rubin goes in there as like, you're not a guy who debates to begin with. When was the last high profile Dave Rubin debate that you could think of? I don't think there are any. And if he's ever done them, it's been about the dumbest topics and he's made the dumb. So now he goes like, wait, I'm going to take on 20 of you guys. And he literally can't get through one. He can't, like, every one of them is just destroying him with the most basic, like, basic of that. Like, he's coming in with talking points that fall apart with one or two questions. Anyway, I don't know. It was something, but anyway, that it is like has been the talk of the internet. I mean, this was a really bad decision for someone like Dave Rubin. And I gotta say, honestly, I'm shocked he would do it. I mean, I guess the thinking could be like, well, yeah, he's not gonna come debate me because that you might get exposed in that. But if it's only a few minutes and these are kids who don't really know as much as you know, or something, like he convinced himself this would be good, but if you were Dave Rubin's, you know, manager, you would go like, yeah, no, don't put him in this environment. Cause there's it, while it takes to do like a longer debate with a formidable opponent, you need to have more of a depth of knowledge and you have to have more of like your arguments and rebuttals thought out. There is also a particular skill it takes to debate like 20 people one after the other. It might be a different thing. Maybe you don't need to have the depth of knowledge if it's a 5-minute thing, but you got to at least be quick on your feet and kind of know the material and know when to pounce on them for getting something wrong. And man, he has none of that. Absolutely none of it.
Yeah.
All right. You
wanna... And then the Iran war clip, which maybe was what you have. That one was particularly embarrassing because he was trying to defend the actions that we've taken in this war. And I mean, he's just recycling through all the old points that make no sense.
Dude, have you seen the highlight clip of him, his coverage of the war?
Oh, when he was going, I promise you it's going to be over in 2 weeks or whatever.
Dude, I mean, there's, hold on 1 second. Let me see. Cause I did share this on my Twitter. I'll send this to Natalie real quick. I'm sorry. It's a little bit of a guilty pleasure, but it's a members only show. We're having fun. Let's go for it. Hold on. This will just take me one second.
I promise you this will not be another quagmire.
Dude, listen, man, you've seen a lot of people get this war wrong. Okay. You will be blown away by the fact that Dave Rubin managed to get pound for pound, he put up more wrong than I've ever seen anybody put up. Like it was, I don't, there's someone who was there the day that Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points and they were just like, yo, this guy just couldn't stop. It was like, dude, he got every detail wrong. Here, Natalie, I just sent it to you. Just like, you won't believe it, Rob, but pull up this, this is Dave Rubin's greatest hits on this. What has only been, you know, what week are we in now, Rob? Is it 10 weeks old, this war? Whatever it is, it's not that long a period of time to fit this much wrong into. Let's, whenever you got it, Natalie, let's play this.
Allow me to make a prediction here in my prediction stuff. I'm not Polymarket, I'm not Kalshi, but I'm pretty good at predictions. And my prediction here is that everything that the media is now going to say about Iran's going to close the Strait of Hormuz and energy prices are going to go crazy and all these, none of this is going to come to pass. Gas prices are coming down and will continue to come down. If the United States wants to keep the Strait of Hormuz open, which it does, and Donald Trump said we'll escort ships through if we have to, it's going to stay open. This is the leader of the Iranian opposition. He has been in exile. His name is Reza Pahlavi. We have shown videos of him before. He's the eldest son of the former Shah of Iran, and he likely is the next leader of Iran. This is the guy that, by all accounts, when this war ends, will go in, and he will be the leader. And again, it will be different. Just remember,
it sounds like the Kurds are starting to enter the country with arms to help the people take out the vestiges of the IRGC. There's a lot of good things happening. This is Iranians, and you can hear they are chanting Bibi June, Bibi Netanyahu. In Iran, they are chanting praise for Benjamin Netanyahu. And when you take out Khomeini and you take out his number two and his number three and his number four and his number 37 and his number 42, then suddenly the next guy's going, it's a little hot in here. And then people start behaving a little bit differently. They've plotted this war, this extraordinary war that will be studied for decades, right? For decades, they will study how this incredible war took place. That's, we are hitting critical infrastructure. We are damaging the regime. So hopefully the people will be able to take over their countries. Now, the question is, if you're going to hit power plants and you're going to hit civilian infrastructure and things of that nature, how do you make sure it's not going to harm the people, but just the regime? We have a Department of War that is not looking for war, but will perform war. Then we are going to do it at the maximum level of competency. I think the way you can look at this, I haven't heard anyone else say this, but this seems to me to be the war to end.
Dude, he ends by the end. He goes, I haven't heard anyone else say this, but this seems to be the war to end all wars. Like, yeah. You haven't heard people say that because that's what they called World War One. That was literally the slogan for World War One, the war to end all wars. But then, Rob, spoiler, I know you haven't read history yet, but it's really good. And there is a Second World War. It wasn't the war to end all wars. But dude, it is like, I don't know, isn't it kind of almost like weird when you look at that and go, you know, loosely speaking, we're in the same business and do the same thing. We've been sitting here talking about the war the whole time. And you're just like, dude, I guess my point is that, Rob, it's not like me and you don't read Axios or the New York Times, or like it's not like we're not familiar with what Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro are saying, but like, are you like, where is your head when this is the way you're reporting on this? Like, you essentially just don't know anything. It seems like Dave Rubin doesn't even read the newspaper. It seems like he talks to one guy who tells him what he's supposed to say. That's how it comes off. Like, how else are you getting all of this wrong?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by Ruben as much as I am anyone who listens to this. The idea that there's someone who walks with regime talking points and is just a sales guy and runs with it and conveys it in a nice suit from a fancy office, that's not surprising to me. It's just surprising to me that you can... that this montage can exist on the internet and that there could be someone who wants to be informed and goes, oh, I watched the Glenn Rubin show.
God, I love that you keep doing it. I almost don't want to correct you because I just love the Glenn. Wouldn't you feel like, you would feel like this montage would be, that's your career's over now because we just saw you get everything wrong. But just the confidence with which he gets it wrong is really something to behold. Like, I don't know, man. I got a lot of confidence, I guess, behind what I say and a lot of certainty to it. But, you know, I keep being right about shit. I mean, if I was wrong this often, it would really fuck with me.
This is like if you had a boxer kept going up going, I'm the greatest in the world, greatest in the world, knocked out, greatest in the world, greatest. Like, it has 72 knockouts in a row. And then he opens up a fight gym and you go to learn there. That's what watching this show is.
Yeah.
I mean, how much do you have to watch a guy just be wrong and you're going to go to him to be informed? I mean, you're the idiot. Yeah,
and what's it like? What's it like when you're a Dave Rubin fan and then you watch him on Jubilee and then you go like, oh, and you just get fucked up by these kids. Here, let's play the Jubilee clip because we've beat around the bush enough. But goddamn, this was something.
So let's start. Well, first off, the disastrous war, the quote unquote disastrous war that you're talking about. You're talking about a 40-day military operation that stopped an apocalyptic regime from getting a nuclear bomb and exporting terrorism throughout the world. And we're now in an economic embargo of them, right?
He also just like, I don't know. It's, I don't know. He's just so bad at this. Like, even just how much you have to have no soul to like say this, like, it's like, It's like when they say the Islamo-fascists or whatever. It's like, what are you even doing? Just putting words together that you think sound scary? What does that even mean? The Islamo-fascists. So what, they're, in addition to Sharia law, they're fascists? Like, what, I think you covered it with, like, Islamists or whatever. But even Dave, this was, it's a war. First off, it's not a war. It's a military conflict, which whatever, to stop an apocalyptic regime from getting a nuclear weapon. Like, I don't know, dude, what does any of this even mean? But he thinks this is like the way to open a debate. Even like to say that in the first moments is just so stupid. Like just not that the kid doesn't even like argue with that, but it's just like, the idea of even now the onus is on you to prove that they're apocalyptic in some way. Anyway, here, let's keep playing.
Basically done a blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. So to say it's a disastrous
war, we've done a blockade.
We did lose 13. We did lose 13 of our soldiers, and that is,
and killed over
terrible.
200 children.
Well, things happen in war, right?
Oh, yeah,
things, yeah. Well, things do happen in war. You can laugh at that. Hold on. Listen,
if Donald Trump wanted to prevent the Islamic Republic of Iran,
I mean, like, I don't know, dude. Outside of like the war hawk circles, who amongst them thinks this is a reasonable rebuttal in a debate? Like, it really is a crazy thing to say that someone goes, literally, this is, I mean, it's in front for everyone to see here. Here is the response. You killed 200 girls. Shit happens. Like, that's your response. Yeah, these things happen. It's always so, it's like the war is hell defense. You're like, okay, but you realize that's not a point in your favor. That's a point in our favor. If these things happen and these things are 200 little girls being murdered, then let's try to avoid these things happening. And so I can't imagine just like you're going into a hostile environment with 20 people who disagree with you around it. And that's the best response you have to this. If you're going in, Rob, knowing that you're going to debate the Iran war, I'm sure, and you're for it, you're well aware this is going to come up, right? But you're like, don't worry, I got an ace in the hole. If they bring that up, I'll just hit him with the, these things happen. Damn, Dave Rubin. Like, I don't know. What can you say, dude? You do this for a living? This is what you do?
Apocalyptic regime and shit happens.
There you go. All right, let's keep playing.
If Donald Trump wanted to prevent the Islamic Republic of Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, he could have just stuck with the Iran nuclear deal that he ripped up.
No,
Iran did not enrich past the 3.67. Wait, they didn't enrich past the 3.67% agreed upon in the JCPOA. They only got to 60% after Donald Trump left that deal.
I'm impressed with your talking points. You got impressive talking points, and you memorized them well. They're not correct, but I am impressed.
Okay.
First off, the Iranians admitted in the negotiation.
First off, Dave Rubin doesn't know if this gets revealed in a second, but he just doesn't know any of this stuff. He has no idea what the kid's even saying. But there is something about like for him to just start like, oh, you have your talking points down or you've memorized them, but none of them are true. It's like, dude, like, what have you come with that wasn't talking points this entire time? It's also a little bit of a weird thing to like. I mean, Rob, it's one thing if you're like in an hours long debate and I were to say to you, you're not really making arguments, you're just reciting talking points. But like in a 5-minute exchange, what are you going to do other than like get down to some bullet points of what you're trying to say here? But Dave Rubin, oh, I'm sorry. It's not as if you made some detailed argument and then he responded with a slogan and you go, oh, your talking points. You said it's an apocalyptic regime that was hell-bent on nuclear Armageddon. And then you said stuff happens. And then he points out that if you, like, you could call it a talking point, but it's absolutely a legitimate thing to present in a quick lightning round debate is like, oh, you say it was all about the 60% enriched uranium. We had him down well below that until they tore up the deal. Totally reasonable. Dave Rubin has no response. Anyway, here, let's see what he comes up with.
Right before the war started, that they were enriching past what they were allowed to. That's number one. Number two, can you agree or verify their claims? It's one thing to say, oh, this is what we're doing, this is what we are agreed to, etc. But you have to be able to verify that. And the idea that we have people on the ground or the UN or some third party organization that can verify what they're actually doing.
The IAEA assessments agree with me. And Tulsi Gabbard, our director of national intelligence, testified in front of Congress last year. And according to the entire intelligence community, Iran did not have a nuclear weapons program.
Can you just pause it right there?
Didn't have a nuclear weapon.
Yes.
Dude, I mean, those are the good talking points. I don't know what to tell you. Good talking points by those kids. If you want to call them talking points, fine. But like, there's some pretty devastating ones there. Is it like, by the way, it seems to be clear, Dave Rubin does not know what the IAEA is. He has no idea what he's talking about. He's going, so you're saying like, there's this idea that we had boots on the ground there who were inspecting it. Yes, Dave, there was an entire inspections regime under the JCPOA. Yes, the UN expert nuclear inspectors were inspecting. Hey, Dave Rubin, how do you think you know that they were enriching up to 60% uranium? Oh, yes, because they were being inspected by international inspectors. This was open. This was not done in secret. And it wasn't against the rules. The rules were under the JCPOA, which Donald Trump walked away from. But again, Dave Rubin doesn't know any of this, and he doesn't feel like he needs to be bothered with knowing any of this. But it is something to see him like just go. He even acts like when he says they had no nuclear weapons program, he goes, no nuclear weapons program? Yes, that was in the annual threat assessment published by Tulsi Gabbard, and she testified to that under oath in front of Congress. He just doesn't know. So that's a ridiculous talking point. Yeah, it's the truth.
Yeah. Gay and dismissive.
And dismissive. I feel bad for the kids he bought. All right, let's keep playing.
Okay. That they didn't have a nuclear weapons program. They were enriching past the point that they were allowed to for civilian use. Everyone knows that. Do you think the Iranian regime before this war, the Iranian regime that has oppressed the people of Iran for 40 years, that was a good government? Were they progressive in any way?
Because by the way, it is hilarious that the fact checks just keep coming up, just getting David Rubin wrong. But just in case anyone wants to know here, because like, I guess this is where it is. It's like Dave doesn't, Glenn here doesn't have his, his talking points. Here's the thing is that he's going off talking points, but he doesn't even have them memorized. Like, he doesn't even remember. So when he goes, everyone knows that Iran was enriching well beyond what they're allowed to for civilian use. It is true. The talking point he's trying to summon is that Iran is enriching well beyond what you need for civilian use. That is true. That part is true. But he's wrong that they're not allowed to. There's nothing that says they're not allowed to. You know, they're members in good standing of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and they were members of good standing of the JCPOA until Donald Trump tore it up, and they still stayed in the JCPOA until Donald Trump launched a war against them, and then they got out of it. So essentially, the NPT says that they can't develop nuclear weapons, and they haven't. They it would be a violation of that treaty to, which they've signed on to, it would be a violation to develop nuclear weapons, but it doesn't tell you anything about 60% versus 40% versus 3% versus 80%. But even, I believe, someone double-checked me, it doesn't even say anything about weapons-grade uranium. It just says you can't build nuclear weapons, is the agreement. And so they're allowed to, anyway, my point is, there is actually no rule that says they're not allowed to kind of be a nuclear hedge state and to demonstrate to everybody that they have mastered the fuel cycle and they can enrich uranium, and letting the world know that they could go to weapons grade if they wanted to. Now, you could argue that that's against the spirit of the NPT or something like that, but anyway, Dave doesn't know any of this stuff. But no, there's actually nothing that's saying they're not allowed to do it. And one easy way to know this, Rob, is that if they were in violation of international law, or if they were in violation of some of these major international treaties, you would have heard about that. They would be using that as one of the justifications for this war. Why isn't Donald Trump or anyone at the UN talking about that? Because it's just not the case. That's not true. But again, Dave Rubin doesn't know that. So immediately now, Dave, after just getting pummeled with nothing, he just pivots to, do you think they're a good regime? Like, isn't this just like the death? This is when a war hawk has lost a debate. That's the sound of a war hawk getting cooked, is when he just pivots to, but are they a good regime? Like, what?
Dude. So you want Iran to be a nuclear power? Oh, right. you want Iran to be able to terrorize the region? Oh, you think that Iran should be allowed to continue to make life miserable for its citizens? No, I'm not saying any of those things. I'm saying that this is a really bad strategy if you're trying to keep them from getting a nuclear warhead.
Well, also just think about how even just getting into like what a big mean regime they are. It's like, think about all the places we're not fighting a war with right now, how ridiculous this would be. If I just turn to you and I go, you guys don't support fighting a war against Haiti? And you were like, wait, what? Why are we fighting war? And I went, oh, so you love,
gonna buy kids?
You love, yeah. Yeah, where are they? Huh? No, you tell me. You just shut down all their operations? No, but like, and that, so what? You love the Haitian regime? Dude, I don't even like the regime in Canada, but we'll be there Friday night, tomorrow. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't mean I want to fight a war with them. Anyway, here, yeah, let's play the rest of this.
I think that was good.
You know what, Natalie?
Regime? Would you say that was a good government? Would you like to?
No.
Maybe actually just look up one more while we're waiting for this. Fine, because I just sent this one, but there's other good clips too. Look up one more Dave Rubin Jubilee clip while we're playing this one, because that'll be fun. Here, let's keep playing.
Under those people, were they progressive in any way? Do they hold any of the values that any of you guys hold?
No, but we don't just start wars on countries whose politics we disagree with or who are oppressive to their own people. We were actually an ally to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. I mean, look, dude, that kid just, it's a perfect response to him. Like, did Dave Rubin really throw that out? Like, he didn't think there would be an answer to that? He goes, yeah, we're allies with vicious regimes. So what? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe see what looks good. Is there? I don't know. I was just thinking if there's another clip, it'll be great. It doesn't matter which one it is. It'll be Dave Rubin looking retarded. I'm quite confident in this. Pull up any Dave Rubin clip from him on Jubilee. And let's see a bunch of kids wrecking him at what he does. And don't get me wrong, like, sometimes these things do. The reason why I'd be hesitant to want to do one of these things is because they do just turn into, you know, just talking over each other, just not listening, trying to get an own. But, like, that's really not what's happening here at all. I don't, like, you should, if you do what we do for a living, and you're my age or Dave Rubin's age, you really shouldn't be just like stumped by a kid in the first 5 minutes of an argument about a topic that you've been covering on your show for many weeks now. Did you find another one, Natalie? All right, let's do it.
What is one main metric that Donald Trump has made better off since he got in office? Like, an example would be GDP, unemployment, inflation, et cetera.
Well, right now, first off, the big, beautiful bill was just passed last year, and it's kicking in now, right? It's kicking in now, okay? So we're going to now see results of that. Like,
just pause it.
So let's
just pause it.
Are you for or against that?
Oh, my God, dude. That he is so bad at this. He couldn't just come up with a thing. The border, dude. The border. How's life better? People aren't pouring in record numbers. That's my metric. That'd be fine. The big, beautiful bill was just passed and is now starting to kick in. That's what you've got. First of all, Rob, when was the big, beautiful bill passed? That's been a while, no? Has it not kicked in yet? What does he mean? In June, the big, beautiful bill is just, it's a big engine. It's just starting to get going, and then we're really going to take off. This is just, like, I mean, just the optics of saying that. Like, if you were going to defend an administration, everybody's got a list of things they could say. You couldn't even just come up with one, just, it's about to get there. Hey, where do you stand on tariffs? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking to not be able to spin these a little bit. Hey, he passed a bill, and it's going to be good down the line. Okay, why are we having a debate? Everything's going to be good down the line. The problem is that we don't have enough faith in Donald Trump. It's the same thing we've heard since the first week when you criticize Donald Trump is you just have to have faith in Donald Trump. And if you're criticizing Donald Trump, then you're getting in the way of his agenda. Cool. Fine. When's the good part? When is it? You keep telling me if I have faith, there's going to be a good part. When's the good part?
Yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, let's keep playing.
Against the universal tariff. So what's the main metric that he made better off?
What?
What's the main metric that he made better off? GDP, unemployment, inflation? Do you have any idea?
Listen.
Can you pause for a second?
I don't think you do.
Do you think...
Can you just pause for 1 second? I love that face that Ruben
defeated...
made. Where he goes, ah, shit, this kid's out-cunting me. Because he keeps throwing cunt back at them, and then that kid just is also gay, and he goes, what's the, and then he's like, ah, shit, I'm getting out cunted. I can't even gay him out of this.
I know. There really is something about that, dude. They are just like, and I hate that. I hate just like arguing with that spirit of like, it is very feminine, I feel like. To be like, while it, like, just make your point, dude. Ask your question. It'll speak for itself. But yeah, it's Dave Rubin's just this defeated, like, as if it's some totally unfair gotcha question. He asked the broadest of questions that you could take into any area you wanted to. Like, how is life better for people? Don't get me wrong. There's not that many answers, but you're defending the regime. You got to have something there. The woke agenda has been defeated. Immigration is under control, blah, blah, blah. We don't have a senile guy as president. Whatever. Something. Yeah, let's keep playing.
Hold on. So you're arguing that things economically were better under Joe Biden.
At the end of his administration, absolutely. Yeah.
So can you give me an example of how?
Yeah, GDP growth was better off. Real median wage growth is better off. Inflation was better off at the end of his administration. Unemployment was better off at the end of his administration. With the worst year of job growth in the past 4 years, just this last year under Trump's administration, the inflation 3.8% year over year since Trump got in office. We're seeing all of those economic indicators become worse off. Can you tell me anything that he's done to make it better off? You say it's broken for Democrats. It sounds like it's broken right now under Trump.
Have you looked at the stock market?
It's worse off in terms of growth in 2025 compared to 2024. You look at Dow Jones and S&P 500.
Oh, God, it's so painful how bad he is at this. Like you don't just have any, almost just like a natural, I don't know, dude. Like you've just, if you were just like boxing with someone, like you're sparring at a gym and he just throws like a piston of a right hand and he's like, whoa, this guy's really fast. You wouldn't be like, let me circle to the left a little bit. You know, like just like a little something of like, let me just try. Like you clearly go, Dave, I'm just saying, just from like having debated a lot and doing this for a living, in like the sense that it's sparring, you'd almost, when you'd feel that kid out even in the beginning, you'd go like, you would tell that the way to handle this wouldn't to be, well, what's your metric? You know, like he had just asked you for your metric and he's pinning you on the fact that you can't give him one. And then Dave goes, well, what's your, clearly this kid has a memorized list of metric. Like you didn't gauge that yet that he would have now. Now look, a lot of the shit that kid just rattled off is kind of bullshit, Rob, right? We could go through a lot of this shit where you're like, what are you saying? So you're measuring inflation over the course of Joe Biden's last year and then comparing it to this year. Why don't you measure the full term? Oh yeah, you don't want to measure the full term because it was actually the worst inflation that we've had under a modern president. So like there's a lot, but there's so much there for Dave Rubin to pick up on, but he is incapable of doing any of it. Any one of those terms, I could have gone like, hey, well, listen, okay, so then when we measure Donald Trump's first term, we don't count the year of COVID, right? I mean, you're not counting the years of your worst immigration and your worst inflation, so you're just skewing these numbers. But you know, like, but he's just incapable of it. So he's just sitting there going, oh no, this guy had a list. I didn't have a list of stuff, but this guy had a list of stuff. So now he wins by default. You know, there's something, I guess, you know, it's kind of like an interesting point to this. And I got to say, I think I did make this point.
If my computer crashes, I wasn't axed. I forgot to plug it in. We're coming to the end anyways, but I'm just letting you know.
Literally,
the CIA didn't get me, at least not yet.
Okay, good to know. Well, you know what, literally, I'll make this point and then we could wrap on this. But there is something where like, and I remember talking about this during Gaza, where like Charlie Kirk, I think, went to Oxford and had a real tough time with some of those kids over there. And it is a funny thing where if you remember, Rob, for so many years, the Dave Rubin, Ben Shapiro guys, it was almost like they positioned themselves as we're the ones that these woke kids are afraid of because they can't handle our ideas, you know? And that kind of was true when they were talking about censorship and safe spaces and transgenderism and all that stuff. But now, between Israel and supporting Trump, you're like, yo, these kids will eat their lunch. Like, dude, Ben Shapiro can't even go debate college kids anymore. You know, I was thinking about that the other day, how everyone, the running joke kept being that, like, Ben Shapiro won't debate Dave or Scott or Max Blumenthal or whoever because he only debates transgender 19-year-olds. And then at a certain point, I was just like, oh, he won't debate a transgender 19-year-old on Israel because they'll probably fuck him up if he catches the wrong one. And that's what you're watching happen to Dave Rubin here, man. That's sad. I feel uncomfortable. All right, Rob's computer's about to die. We're over the hour mark. I love you guys. We're headed to Toronto tomorrow, so see some of you guys out there. Really looking forward to it. Thanks for subscribing. Catch you next week. Peace.